Australia needs a long-term policy and vision if it's to fully capitalise on the growth of Asia's middle class. And that's going to require renewed investment in agriculture from both government and industry to the tune of $100 billion. That's the key finding of a report by the Australian Academy of Technological Sciences and Engineering. Now, rather ironically, that report was launched this week at the same time as news of another 300 job cuts at the CSIRO and federal government budget cuts to science by as much as $2 billion. I spoke to Professor Snow Barlow after the launch of the report, Green Growth, Food and Fibre.
We wonder about the commitment of this government to science. There is no science minister for the first time for quite a while. We also know that the Prime Minister's Science, Technology and Innovation Council, which usually meets twice to three times a year, has not met in this government as yet. Sure, you know, we have a budget problem. And of course, all sectors of the community need to contribute to doing something about that. What we're talking about is where Australia's standard of living may be in the next 30 years. You know, post-mining boom, what are we going to depend on?
And you're pushing agriculture. You call for a national, multi-decade, bipartisan approach.
Challenging.
Yes. I was going to say nothing like asking for the near impossible.
Well, why should it be? You know, it was very interesting. Brian Smith, the Nobel laureate in astrophysics, wrote a piece around how Australian science policy wobbles all the time and go from one policy to another with successive government. And top quality scientists can't cope with that in the sense where you recruit very good people and then they don't have any funding and they leave. His key statement in that was by far the best thing we could do would be to stay with some policy for a decade, and that would be the biggest return we could get. So I'm really asking for something like that.
How critical to that is the CSIRO? They've cut another 300 jobs, so that's 700 that have gone in the last 12 months. There are reports their budget is going to be cut by as much as $20 million. Is it possible to keep cutting at the CSIRO and perhaps refocus what they're doing to make it more critical to this food future that you talk about?
That's a challenge. That's a big challenge for them. You know, CSIRO is important. CSIRO is our national research organisation. And while state departments, while universities make very big contributions to agriculturalist workers as well, CSIRO is the body that is able to mount big groups of people to look at important issues. We hope that they don't get cut any further, but also we hope that the rural food agricultural area and CSIRO isn't cut as part of this current cut, because it has declined within CSIRO quite considerably over the last 20 years as other sectors have become more important.
And if it does get cuts to agricultural science?
It just means that we might miss out on what is a sort of a once in half a century opportunity in some ways, this Asian dining boom. You know, we've been through a time of fairly declining terms of trade in the 80s, 90s and the noughties essentially. But suddenly, if we look in the last 7 years, the FAO Food Price Index has doubled and then settled down at something like is about 70% what it was in a decade ago. So the opportunity is there. Now, are we going to grasp that? And it's not as though there aren't competitors. You know, New Zealand is probably doing better than we are at present. They've got their act very much together. Brazil is a big competitor. The US is a big competitor. And Canada is a big competitor. So just because we're on the bottom of Asia doesn't really give us a big comparative advantage. But what will give us a comparative advantage, if we leverage off our reputation for actually producing quality food, producing safe food, and producing something that is traceable, so the middle classes of Asia know that when they buy Australian, and that's the brand Australian, they are getting something that they can depend on.
We're all getting a little closer to retirement, and I wonder, as a scientist of some renown, if you feel that it's ever been this bad as far as a recognition of an investment in science by government?
Well, it's early days in this government yet. It's the first budget. You know, we have been through, as I say to my students, some dark tunnels. We are not seeing very much encouragement for the sector to hang in there, and hopefully there will be better times. We haven't heard much about a science policy at all, haven't heard much about an innovation policy. So we're wondering what we're doing all this science for.
Professor Snow Barlow from the University of Melbourne. Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge, and his wife Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge, were taken on a short tour of the Sydney Royal Easter Show yesterday. Neville Russell is a long-standing committee member of the Royal Agricultural Society of New South Wales. He told Sally Bryant he vividly remembers the previous royal visit to the Sydney show. He was given the honour of taking care of the Princess Royal, Princess Anne, during her tour in 1988. And he says the royal visit this year is going to be a real showstopper.
It sure is, yes. But I can remember back in 1988 meeting and privileged to look after Her Royal Highness Princess Anne while we were conducting the dairy interbreed competition. And I looked after her for probably 45 minutes or a little bit longer.
Wow, what an experience. So how did it work? What were your jobs?
Well, first of all, I've been part of the cattle committee, and the dairy section is a great part of the cattle committee. With our dairy cows, we have a culmination, which we call the dairy interbreed, and the winners from quite a lot of the classes in the six dairy breeds compete for the grand final, as it were, for the supreme animal.
So that was what you were involved in when the Princess Royal came to the show?
That's correct, yes. I was chairman of the dairy subcommittee at that time, and the chairman of the cattle committee, Trevor Smith, asked me if I would be prepared to look after Princess Anne at that time. And I had to give them a running itinerary of times and what we do, how we addressed her and that sort of thing. And the day came when, nervously, Trevor Smith, the chairman of the cattle committee, was introduced to Princess Anne and brought her along to meet me as chairman of the dairy people.
And you spent, you say, about 45 minutes with her. What were the topics of conversation?
There had been the first of our competitions run, which was the pen of five animals from the six dairy breeds. And a plaque had just been presented to the winner of the Holstein breed, to the president. And he was holding that, and I introduced Princess Anne to him. And she looked at the plaque and said, "You haven't run it all the time. There's a lot of the Jersey little plaques on this." And of course she was very pro-Jersey. But then I introduced her to each one of the dairy presidents. She had a one-on-one conversation for probably a minute with each one and really made them feel at home.
And it sounds very much as though the Princess Royal had a fair handle on the whole dairy industry.
Very much so. She... Following that, we sat down and talked. She understood the feeding of dairy cows and all that. She said the Holstein cows were too big. She'd prefer the Windsor Jerseys much more. But we discussed breeding and artificial insemination, feeding of cattle and that sort of thing.
Now, have you been given the nod to do any squiring of Prince William when he's here?
No, I'm keeping away from that. There are a lot of more important people than me to do that.
It's quite an exciting thing for the show, for the Prince and for the Duchess to be coming.
It's very much so, and it becomes a royal show now.
So is it creating a different vibe in the show this year, do you think?
Well, I would hope so. I know it's going to be a very, very short visit, which is so disappointing, but there'll be very few people be able to see them but not speak to them, because I think they come in for an hour or so and then they go again.
Neville Russell, long-standing committee member of the Royal Agricultural Society of New South Wales. Now, animal lovers tend to get rather too carried away with anthropomorphising their pets. New Zealand comedians Amelia Guild and Emma Newborn have turned that very concept of giving animals human characteristics into a show called The Bitches Box. Set on the windswept plains of New Zealand's South Island, the stars of the show are two bitches, that is, female sheepdogs, Red and Twink, who are on heat and therefore locked in the infamous Bitches Box. The short play is currently running at the Melbourne Comedy Festival before touring regional New South Wales. Amelia and Emma escaped the box to come into the ABC studios to talk about the play.
We wanted to write a play and we wanted to depict life on the farm through the eyes of the dogs, and that's not always fun and laughter and games. They're hard workers and stuff goes wrong and, yeah.
Now, it is very much about farm life. I had the vision of a windswept sheep farm. Good. On the South Island of New Zealand.
That's what we wanted.
Are you both from a farm?
I am, but no, Emma is an Auckland girl.
Yeah, born and bred city. I'd never even been on a farm until 2.5 years ago.
Because it really captures what it is in a dog's brain to muster sheep. Did you kind of get it to start off with?
Yeah, the first time I went to a farm, I woke up at 5 a.m. with Amelia and we went out into the back blocks of her station and did a muster, basically, and it was amazing. And I was like, you know, sort of crouching behind the scrub with the scrim. And
it was funny. We really were just helping my brother, who was there trying to do his best sort of shepherd show with all his dogs. I'll show you, Emma, how you muster a mob of sheep and lambs and get them in. And then they had the classic lamb break that was not meant to happen at all, but you know, you've got farmers stomping on hats and dogs just having a hell of a good time.
Because you have the lamb break, which is when the lambs break away from the mob.
Yeah,
and you have that in the show. Yeah. And the dogs love that.
Absolutely love it.
But don't chew
thing.
On the ewe.
Yeah.
Like that. Tell us about the two main characters, Red and Twink.
Twink is the young pup who's getting put into the box for the first time. And yeah, Emma plays Red, the old, the wise old bitch who's been on a few heats, knows what that's all about. Get locked in the box and you're there for a good couple of weeks.
And has had her heart broken by the house dog.
Yeah. Yeah, she's been around the yard a few times. She knows, you know, she's sort of slightly world weary, but I think it by the end is still learning off the young pup as much, you know. It's actually a really nice relationship between the two of them by the end.
And we have a new house dog who is a bit of a rapper.
I mean, this is absolutely modelled on my parents' black Labrador. He's desperately uncool, but he wants to be part of, you know, part of the groove on the farm with all the farm dogs. And he has all the perks of, you know, the house dog. So he gets way too much food, way too much freedom.
Gets a little excited and wheezes in the house.
Totally. But he's just got no respect from the rest of the team. You know, they've got their own little pack thing going on in the hierarchy, and we just thought, why not completely throw it on its head and have him trying to rap to woo them.
And he thinks he's really cool when he rolls in a cow pat. I thought that was rather delightful as well. Definitely house dog stuff.
You've seen that though, haven't you? When dogs, they've rolled in something horrific and they just feel quite, they're all proud. You know,
they can't understand why they're in trouble. And I think the pièce de résistance, I have to say, is the retired pig hunter, was he?
Yeah, the pig hunting
dog. What's his name again?
His name is James Clive Reginald Montgomery Smith.
Quintessential retired British Army officer in a pig hunting dog with an eye patch and an extraordinary dribble. How do you dribble like that?
It's actually very easy. You just, if you talk out the side of your mouth, it sort of naturally happens. The spit just falls out.
Now, I don't really need the spit, but could we hear a little bit of him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Soldiers, dogs of the pig, my brothers, I am James Clive Reginald Montgomery Smith of the fourth kennel in the line of kennels under the self-seeded 75-year-old Norfolk pine.
Wonderful. And you did it without the dribble. I'm very pleased. Perhaps we could hear a little bit of Twink. Or how about when Twink is talking about which dog she might like to mate with?
I wonder what Steve's doing. I wonder what Max is doing. Oh, I wonder what Please is doing. Hey, he's probably penning up that or working the race. Not us, though. We just get to relax. Chill out. Hang loose. Rest, recover, recoup.
Very cute. It is brave of you to bring this to the Melbourne Comedy Festival. I understand you are going to regional New South Wales afterwards, but to be honest with you, we're so much more urbanised in Australia than in New Zealand. I wonder perhaps if the average Melbourne person doesn't have the reference points, doesn't really quite get the whole farm dog thing.
I think that's a really interesting thing for us. We took it to Edinburgh and we had a similar sort of, you know, it was very much a big city. People still engage with it, and I think it's because they're learning about a world or getting a window into a world that they don't know. And people still know dogs, so they can attach to that, you know, and recognise their things and their own dogs at home. But in terms of the farming, yeah, I like to think that we are, you know, giving them something to think about or learn about.
And what's next for you? Where do you go next with the Bitches Box?
The Bitches Box. We, New South Wales rural tour planned, actually. We've got, we normally in New Zealand perform in woolsheds. We've done about 50-odd woolsheds around the country. And we're taking this to New South Wales. So we're starting at Old Aronbang Woolshed, which is beautiful old 40-something stand shed. You know, quite a historic place, and we're doing three shows there near Orange, and then heading up to Mudgee and doing some shows there. So,
oh, well, best of luck with it. I reckon that's the place it should be, in a wool shed. It'd just be wonderful because you get that smell as well.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Yeah. Amelia Guild and Emma Newborn, who wrote and now act in the short comedic play The Bitches Box, which is showing at the Melbourne Comedy Festival and then goes on tour around regional New South Wales.